Good evening, and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report. On today's show, we'll have extended excerpts from Wednesday night's League of Women Voters Forum on Propositions 1, 2, and 3 regarding education overhaul in Idaho. But first, this news. Bids on the Moscow Federal Building, which houses the post office and some Latah County offices, stayed at $1 million for most of the week, but another bid recently came in, which was for $2.02 million. A computer glitch on the Federal General Services Administration auction webpage marked the federal building as sold earlier today, but the auction has been put back online. General Services Administration spokesperson Stephanie Knitzer said, "All of the bidders in the system were notified that we had a technical difficulty and that the auction will go forward for another 24 hours. Knitzer said of the glitch, "It happens on occasion enough to have it written into the invitation for bids." With the problem solved, the online auction is now set to close tomorrow at 11:48 a.m., unless another higher bid is received by then, at which point the auction will be extended for another 24 hours. Knitzer said the winning bidder will not be identified until a deposit is received amounting to 10% of the purchase price. As another November deadline nears, Idaho insurers are asking Governor C.L. Butch Otter to consider a nonprofit state-based insurance exchange for the state as part of Obama's Affordable Care Act. Idaho has until November 16th to make public its intentions concerning the insurance exchange. This past Tuesday, Governor Otter's advisor, Robert Mitchell of the Denver firm KPMG LLC, said there is not enough time to produce an insurance exchange that covers thousands of Idaho's residents who have no insurance. However, another consultant, Jack Rovner, who represents the insurers, says that's not true. Rovner maintains the state can still develop a state nonprofit agency to manage this online insurance market. Rovner has been looking into whether Idaho can maintain a privately run model that meets federal requirements under Obamacare. Rovner says the answer is yes. He found Idaho has a precedent for such a model. He said there is an agency already set up for that purpose called the Idaho Health Data Exchange, which was created by President George W. Bush in 2004, which was an effort to bring the country closer to a nationwide tech infrastructure for the exchange of medical data. The Idaho Health Data Exchange was incorporated by Idaho Health and Welfare Director Dick Armstrong. In 2009, Governor Otter designated the agency to carry out the initiative for the state, which qualified it to receive federal grants. Rovner maintains a similar model could be adapted for an Idaho health insurance exchange. He points to Hawaii, which has already made the jump. Hawaii has already received $62 million from the federal government to set up the plan. Rovner said, quote, "What Idaho did on that health data exchange is really the perfect template. This is an option that will work if you're interested in it. It's legal." State Insurance Director Bill Deal had put a damper on the plan when he agreed earlier this week with KPMG consultant Robert Mitchell, who said there's not enough time to set up the exchange because numerous deadlines are looming, including the November 16th decision deadline. Deal said there was legislation for such a plan last year, but was stalled in the legislature. Deal said a board would have to be set up and details covered, such as how the exchange would work. Deal said, "The timeline is our enemy. That isn't going to be set up like magic, no matter what." The Moscow Volunteer Fire Department is suing two former paramedics for more than $8,000 in training costs, who allegedly broke their 3-year service contracts. The complaint filed yesterday in Latah County Second District Court says Sarah Harris and Nathaniel Anderson completed their department-paid paramedic training in June 2009 under a contract requiring they remain with the Moscow Volunteer Fire Department 3 more years. The fire department says they tried to get a refund of the tuition, but they were forced to follow legal action. The department had to file a similar suit against another paramedic, Gretchen Rice, on October 11, 2011. Rice paid back the money without a court decision. The retention of paramedics is a long-time problem with the program. Many of those trained with city money seek paid positions elsewhere. Anderson is a paid paramedic in Lewiston, and Harris works for a Spokane paramedic company. Once people are trained, it's hard to keep them because they are actively recruited by other companies. The training costs more than $10,000 and takes the paramedics 18 months for their 1,500 hours of class time. A third activist has been put in prison by the federal government for refusing to speak to a Seattle grand jury about the politics of anarchist activities in Portland, Olympia, and Seattle. Leah Plant appeared before the grand jury for a third time yesterday and refused to answer questions and was hauled away, although she has not been convicted of a crime. Plant and other activists were subpoenaed by the grand jury after the FBI and a joint terrorism task force raided homes in Portland, Olympia, and Seattle in late July. The warrants in the raid said police were looking for anti-government or anarchist literature and listed other items that were connected to, quote, conspiracy to destroy government property and interstate travel with intent to riot. Most activists assumed the raids were connected to the May Day protests in Seattle, which resulted in broken windows and other vandalism. Will Potter's Green is the New Red website reports Civil Liberties Defense Center attorney Lauren Reagan has learned the grand jury for this case was impaneled March 2nd, well before the May Day protests. Potter writes on the Green is the New Red website, "The grand jury is likely a fishing expedition targeting those who identify as anarchists or associate with anarchists." He wrote, "Grand juries have historically been used against radical social movements as a tool to intimidate and to gather information. When activists enter a grand jury proceeding, they check their rights at the door. They are asked about what they believe, what their friends believe, who they associate with, what kinds of activism they support. If they choose to assert their First Amendment and Fifth Amendment rights by refusing to speak about their political beliefs and political associations, they can be imprisoned." The other two activists, now in jail for refusing to answer Seattle grand jury questions, are Matt Duran and Catherine Olegnik. Potter writes on his website, "Those targeted by grand juries don't necessarily have information about a crime," and he points to a recent FBI entrapment plot targeting Occupy Cleveland activists and FBI training materials, which describe anarchists as, quote, criminals seeking an ideology. A new study says more than 240,000 marijuana arrests have occurred in Washington over the past 25 years. The study by the Marijuana Arrest Research Project issued the numbers and details of the arrests. The information was gathered from FBI data. The information is part of a push for the new initiative in Washington, I-502, which would legalize and tax pot sales at state-sanctioned stores for those 21 years of age or older under state law. Study co-author and sociologist Harry Levine told the Associated Press, "Judging which arrests were accompanied by other charges is impossible due to how the FBI keeps Washington state records." The study says using data from other states shows the majority of arrests are simply for misdemeanor possession, and the majority of those arrests are young people. Some Idaho voters are getting their vote in early with absentee ballots. In the past, many Idahoans have taken advantage of the chance to vote early. More than 250 voters showed up in Coeur d'Alene for early in-person voting, causing lines and congested traffic in the area of the Kootenai County Elections Office. For the 2008 election, close to 200,000 absentee ballots were cast statewide, which accounts for 30% of the votes in Idaho for that presidential election year. Saturday, November 2nd is the last day for in-person absentee balloting statewide. Mail-in ballots must be received by county clerks by Tuesday, November 6th, in order to be counted. TV ads opposing the marriage equality referendum 74 started yesterday in Washington. The group Preserve Marriage from Washington says it's not looking to take away the right to equal rights of gay partnerships. They just want to take away the term marriage. The ad says homosexual couples already have the same rights as straight married couples under the domestic partnership law and asks voters to reject referendum 74. The ad says people can oppose same-sex marriage and not be anti-gay. The ad opens with a rainbow and warns of potential lawsuits that may occur if the referendum passes. Washington Unite for Marriage spokesperson Andy Groh told the Associated Press discrimination based on sexual orientation is already illegal under the state's anti-discrimination law, which expanded in 2006 to cover gays and lesbians, and no known lawsuits have occurred in Washington. The official statement for the Washington Unite Marriage campaign in response to the ad is that the sole intention of the ad is to scare and mislead voters. Same-sex marriage is currently legalized in New York, Connecticut, Iowa, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. Maryland is also having a vote this fall to approve a gay marriage referendum. Maine will also vote to decide on a same-sex marriage referendum overturned 3 years ago, and Minnesota will vote on adding a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Winco's corporate offices recently gave a large donation of goods to Camas Prairie Food Bank in Grangeville. The company shipped $17,000 worth of non-perishable canned and boxed goods a week ago. Mike Reed of Winco headquarters says the company routinely gives to food banks in Oregon and Idaho, but they heard Camas was facing a severe shortage. The food bank's requests increased to over 100 in the past month. That occurred after the Idaho County Food Bank closed its doors in September. We now turn to our featured segment. On Wednesday, the Moscow League of Women Voters held a forum on Propositions 1, 2, and 3, which will be on the statewide ballot November 6th. A yes vote on the propositions will uphold Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education overhaul laws called Students Come First. A no vote will repeal them. It's expected that most voters will cast their ballots either yes or no on all three of the propositions and not split their votes. On today's program, we bring you extended excerpts from Wednesday night's panelists on Propositions 1 and 3. The two panelists are Daryl Deedy, supporting the propositions, and Shirley Ringo in opposition. Here's former state senator and former Caldwell School District Superintendent Daryl Deedy, who is chair of Idahoans for Choice in Education, the founder of the Caldwell Foundation for Education Opportunity, and who represented Yes for Idaho Education, speaking on Proposition 1.
Proposition 1, first and foremost, is the elimination of continuing contract, or tenure, as it's often called, but tenure is the wrong term. It's a continuing contract or renewable contract. This provision gives school boards and administrators a much improved tool to weed out underperforming or unsatisfactory teachers and achieve that goal of having a good teacher in every classroom in Idaho. It also limits negotiations to salary and benefits. And it also says that that process must be completed by a specific date. It can't go on like it does or has in the past, which creates an unsettled attitude or atmosphere in our schools when the contract is pending back in November and December and sometimes dragging on into the spring. Clearly, it's a distraction from good schools and good teaching. All negotiations in public. That's always good when we're working in the sunlight. I think it ties a portion of the teacher and principal evaluation to student achievement. It's not a novel idea, I think, to evaluate a person's job performance based upon what job they are intended to do or supposed to be doing. And that's what this Proposition 1 says will happen. So in every way, the various components of the law addressed in Proposition 1 supports the goal that I mentioned at the onset of having a good teacher in every Idaho classroom. And I think that is something that we could all agree on.
That was Idahoans for Choice in Education Chair Daryl Deedy speaking in favor of Proposition 1 on this November's ballot. We now turn to Idaho Education Association member and Democratic State Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow, who represented the group Vote No on 1, 2, and 3 Wednesday night.
At the time of the economic downturn, a committee with legislators, State Department of Education, and other stakeholders met to discuss and make decisions about how the education budget might be trimmed. The process was transparent, and although many didn't like the result, there was reluctant acceptance. Now, if this proposition passes, many of those agreed upon measures would be deleted, and were handed huge changes by Superintendent Tom Luna. There was no transparency leading to these decisions. Top down, this is how it's going to be, he says. After Superintendent Luna presented his legislation, one educator after another testified against these changes in legislative committee to no avail. I suggest we recognize Proposition 1 for what it is, a punitive measure designed to dismantle the Idaho Education Association. I'll begin with change from the continuing contracts limited to 1 and 2 year contracts. This change really is based upon what I call the big lie, the claim that it is impossible to remove a bad teacher. And this connected to the claim, that is the insinuation, that weak teachers are everywhere in our public schools. We hear that we need to get rid of tenure for public school teachers. Public school teachers have not had tenure. After a teacher's third year of successful teaching, he or she is put on continuing contract, and that involves, from then on, a yearly evaluation. If the evaluation is satisfactory, the contract is automatically extended for the next year. If not, there's a probationary period during which necessary improvements must be made. If they are not, the teacher can be released. Perhaps you have heard the IEA steps in to protect bad teachers. Actually, the reverse is true. The IEA works to help teachers improve. The IEA disputes the release of a teacher only if the process I described has not been followed. Hence, administrators must be effective in staff development. If this law is not rejected, we'll have Category A 1 year contracts for individuals in their first or greater years of employment in a district with no right to a review by the Board of Trustees if there's a decision not to reemploy. And Category B contracts. They're limited to 2 years offered at the sole discretion of the Board of Trustees for certificated personnel in their fourth or greater years of continuous employment with the same school district. The board may add a year upon expiration of the first year, resulting in a new 2 year contract. The board may decide not to reemploy a teacher for any reason at all. The teacher then receives a written statement of reasons by July 1st and may have an informal review. I don't think this process is going to improve the quality of teachers in our schools. And in fact, it's already causing many teachers to decide to quit the profession or leave. Finally, I'll address the negotiations law. To define a term, a master agreement is an agreement between the district and the teachers containing matters upon which agreement has been reached in previous years. Either the district or the teachers may request that any of those be renegotiated. Usually, there is an evergreen clause or continuation clause stipulating that these be carried forward unless renegotiated. Negotiations have involved salary and working conditions. This gives teachers the opportunity to discuss issues such as preparation time, amount of lunch duty required, class size guidelines, and a number of other things that affect their ability to perform effectively. But the Luna laws will change all of this. They limit the scope of negotiations to compensation only. All details of master agreements having to do with anything other than compensation will be null and void. This would eliminate years of work in districts involving teachers, administrators, and trustees to build good school environments. Tom Luna states these working conditions belong in board policy only, not in a master agreement. I absolutely do not agree. Board policy is subject to change at any time, and such an approach offers no assurances to teachers that their discussions have lasting results. Finally, what is unbelievable to me in negotiations law? If no agreement regarding compensation has been reached by the parties on or before June 10th, the Board of Trustees at a meeting held no later than June 22nd shall establish compensation for professional employees for the ensuing year as it deems appropriate. Although that must affect the last best faith offer by the board, it clearly limits what people might be willing to discuss. We know where the in whose hands the cards lie in a situation like that. For all of those reasons that I have discussed, I think that this measure deserves and demands your no vote.
That's Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow. We now go back to Daryl Deedy of Idahoans for Choice in Education for his rebuttal.
43% of our kids that, well, let's start over. 20% of our kids don't even graduate from high school, and of those that do graduate, only 43% of them are capable of doing college-level work. We lag behind. We're 23rd or 24th in international competition, if you will, for academic performance. 23 countries are ahead of us in math. 24 of them are ahead of us in science. That's not a good record. And how are you going to correct that? You're going to correct it by making sure you have a quality teacher in front of those kids in every classroom in Idaho. And you're not going to do it by protecting through an archaic law. And I know Shirley would say, there's a law in the books if the administrators would just use it to get rid of those poor teachers. Well, the fact is, it's not used because it's too cumbersome. I'd like to read a quote from a study done in a place where I spend some time. A recent study of public employees, including teachers, revealed that over a 15-month period in the state of Arizona, none were ever fired. Teachers are rarely fired. It is just simply easier to relocate the teacher or ignore the problem, but all the time the teacher remains in the classroom. You've heard of the rubber room in New York. We don't want that in Idaho. The new laws proposed by the governor and by the 2011 legislature will move us forward to put that quality teacher in every classroom. Thank you.
That was Daryl Deedy of Idahoans for Choice in Education. Now to Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow.
I don't have numbers to dispute some of those he quoted, but I would like to talk about how we improve schools. I think that we improve schools if we have a legislature that's behind taking the steps that it needs to improve our public schools. It would be a good idea, for example, if our funding would be above 50th in the nation in per pupil spending. Think of what we might be able to do with a little more support in that regard. We do have an abysmal record with respect to our high school graduates going on to higher education. I'm not sure how accurate the measures are because of students that don't go on immediately. I'm not sure how all of those are tracked and how accurate it is, but I do think we need to improve in that regard. And do you suppose we could do that if we made high school or college more affordable and going on to professional schools more affordable? There's a great deal that could happen at the legislative level to improve our system, and if we expect it to improve, it really has to happen there. Now, if the system that we have is going to work, the administrators have to have a good policy for staff development, and that is doable, and I've seen it done in the Moscow district, and I know that it can work. I also might mention that in 2000 or so, the teachers gave up some contract protections in exchange for a guarantee from the legislature that they'd set up a mentoring program where experienced teachers would mentor new teachers and help them improve. After funding that for something like 2 or 3 years, the legislature abandoned it. And that's something that could have contributed to a successful staff development problem or program and helped our schools improve. But I don't buy the notion that we have as many bad teachers around as some people might imply.
Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow, speaking at a forum on Propositions 1, 2, and 3, put on by the Moscow League of Women Voters Wednesday night at the 1912 Center. We now go to the arguments for and against Proposition 3 with supporter Daryl Deedy of Idahoans for Choice in Education speaking first.
Over 100,000 people signed that petition to get this proposition on the ballot. I can't believe that all those people were actually against the benefit to our schools that are contained in all of those Senate bills that were passed in 2011. That makes no sense to me. I would rather think, and I think in some cases I'm sure of this, that some of those signers of the petition were supporting a technology, were supporting a Proposition 3, and they just wanted the opportunity to express that support at the polls. I hope that was the case in many instances. In this day and age, 2012, where some schools are issuing iPads to kindergartners, where many states are already issuing computers to their high school kids, and where a North Carolina school district issued 4,400 laptops to students in grades 4 to 12, it's a time when textbooks are becoming obsolete. It is hard to believe that Idaho wants to ignore the future. A couple of quotes. First, from the superintendent of that school district in Mooresville, North Carolina. They just issued 3 years ago 4,400 laptops to 4,400 kids, grade 4 to 12. And he says, this is not just about technology, not just about the box, the computer. It is about changing the culture of instruction, preparing students for the future, not the past. And from President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, perhaps you read this in the paper recently, he was commenting about how South Korea is moving towards all digital environment in their schools. South Korea outperforms us in every discipline. And Secretary Duncan had this to say, the world is changing. This has to be where we go as a country. So what is in this proposition that seems to alarm some folks? Support of this proposition means that schools, teachers, and students will have the technological tools and training relevant today. That every school in Idaho will have equal access and opportunity no matter where they live, Blackfoot, Bruno, Boise. That every high school teacher and every student, not just some as it is today, will have a wireless laptop device. And every high school will be wired and equipped, with wireless internet accessibility. And beginning with the graduating class of 2016, students will be required to complete 2 credits, a whopping 4% out of the 46 that they're required to graduate. Such courses, and I think this is important to note, are to be completed in school, on school time, with teacher present. Another thing that's not mentioned very much in Proposition 3, and that is the impact on charter schools in the state of Idaho. It does authorize our state institutions, state universities, state colleges, to sponsor charter high schools. Nothing in there not to like. However, the opponents come up with a lot of misleading stuff. For example, unfunded mandate, raised property taxes, not true. It is all funded at the state level. And they also talk about trading teachers for computers. Again, not true. When did new technology in our schools replace teachers? Never has happened. It's been the opposite. Again, will support of Proposition 3 support our goal of putting great teachers in every Idaho classroom? The answer seems obvious, but let me repeat some stuff. If will providing every teacher and every high school student with the best information possible make them better teachers? Think about Khan Academy, for example. Some of you are familiar with that. That's a great tutorial device that any teacher can use in their classroom. I think it will definitely make our teachers better teachers and make our schools better. Will providing teachers with an unprecedented amount of professional development to learn how to take advantage of all the new technology be helpful? Sure it will. Will having all of their high school students equipped with a laptop or similar device be helpful to the teacher? Right now, some of them are. You know that 85% of our schools have lined up to get those devices? 85% of them. If this proposition fails, we're still going to move forward with technology. But maybe that 15% might be left out. Let's get them all involved. The decision of Proposition 3 is very clear. Or as the guy from North Carolina says, are we going to prepare our kids, our students for the future, or are we going to live in the past? Thank you.
Recently, I heard an individual declare support for the Luna Laws because she wants technology in our schools. Whether we want technology in schools is not the issue. Of course we do. The issue centers around the best way to accomplish it. And there are many points of view. Superintendent Luna's actions on this issue speak volumes about his style of leadership. This is a huge decision for Idaho. The enormity of it demands plenty of input, statewide hearings even, but we got a decision hatched behind closed doors. There are many ideas related to the best approach for integrating technology and learning, from classroom iPads to one-on-one laptop programs. There are mixed results with the one-on-one laptop initiatives. Maine's statewide program is the largest such initiative in the United States. A 2011 publication by Brian Goodwin reports little effect on student achievement in Maine, although there was a slight rise measured in writing scores. Middle schools in Texas found slightly higher growth measured in mathematics, none in reading, and writing scores lower. Michigan measured 8 matched pairs of schools and found higher achievement in 4 laptop schools, lower in 3, and no difference in the final pair. On the total disaster level, Liverpool, New York students have used school-issued laptops to exchange answers on tests, download pornography, and hack into local businesses. Every other morning when the entire school has study hall, the network freezes because of the sheer numbers of students roaming the internet. The school board president noted that after 7 years, there was literally no evidence to have any impact on student achievement, none. In Rockport, Maine, Camden Hills Region High School spent $56,000 on laptop computer repairs last year. That cost could jeopardize the entire program at their school, and costly repairs are attributed to carelessness. Larry Cuban, a well-respected voice on education, admonishes one-on-one advocates for making outlandish claims about improved learning, better teaching, and students getting high-salary jobs. Some of the poor results have been attributed to lack of teacher buy-in. Certainly in Idaho, where the proposal took teachers by surprise and their testimony in legislative committee was ignored, there is an absence of teacher buy-in. It is to be expected that they believe student comes first means technology trumps teachers, since the funding for computers comes at their expense. A good leader would not antagonize those responsible for carrying out his program. Tom Luna refers to the successful Maine initiative as evidence of success of the program. I spoke to a principal of grade 7 through 12 public school there this morning, and Sue Hubby spoke with an educator. We discovered that in Maine, all 7 through 8 grade students are issued laptops purchased by the state. There have been mixed results. The grade 7 through 12 principal liked the program, and in particular, he mentioned low-income students who normally didn't have access to computers. He also told me that in their program, anyone who wants to take his computer home is required to pay a $45 fee to help cover the cost of maintenance. There's an upper limit of $80 per family. If a student's family cannot afford to pay the fee, that student is not allowed to take the computer home. High schools may opt into the program or not in Maine. If they choose to participate, the district must purchase the computers itself. High schools can have their own plan, They may invest in devices other than laptops. For example, some have chosen to use iPads. In our Genesee district in Latah County, I think we see a great example of what local districts can accomplish. They have supplied iPads to some of the elementary classrooms and have a goal of providing take-home laptops for high school students. Let's talk about distance learning for a minute. Drop back 5 yards and punt. That is what State Superintendent Tom Luna is doing when it comes to attracting a complete staff of quality teachers to our rural schools. Creative minds could devise workable recruitment plans to bring educators to our small towns. There is such an effort for recruiting physicians. Why not teachers? If there are certain important courses for which a small school has no instructor, certainly distance learning levels the playing field. But think what it would be like if a cadre of talented teachers located in varying locations were to team teach through distance learning. Each teacher could present lessons from areas of their enthusiasm and strength, and there would be a teacher in the classroom to monitor follow-up discussions and practice. I say keep the distance learning, but work to assure that there is also a quality teacher in the classroom. Give all students a choice, not just those in larger districts. Dual credits. This is popular with some individuals. My personal opinion is that it is useful for some students with the appropriate levels of ability and self-discipline. However, I am disturbed by our trend to reward students when they just complete work faster. I think we need to work to nurture curiosity, ability to communicate, and a deeper inspection of topics. Genesee Superintendent Wendy Moore has said it clearly. If the technology gets voted down, it won't be because people are against technology. People will be against how it was funded. It's not about bringing technology into the classroom at all. It's an issue of where the money is coming from. I'd say it's about leadership and local control. Let's defeat this initiative, have some open discussions, and make a decision people can support.
That was Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow speaking against Proposition 3 at Wednesday night's League of Women Voters Forum. Ringo represents the group Vote No on 123. You also heard from former Caldwell School Superintendent Daryl Deedy speaking for the group Yes for Idaho Education with the yes vote argument on the propositions. KRFP will broadcast the entire 1.5 hour League of Women Voters Forum Sunday, October 20th at 12 noon. And we will also make the recording available on the KRFP website. That's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Jim Roach and Craig Wheeler assisted with this newscast. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great weekend.